Before we jump into today's show, I've got a few important things to share with you. First, I want to tell you about my friends over at DesignQ. DesignQ is a subscription-based graphic design service that gives you access to unlimited graphic design support for one simple monthly price. With that, you also get unlimited design revisions at no additional cost. And just like your Netflix subscription, you can pause or cancel at any time. But why would you want to? The DesignQ team is fantastic and they do great work. I know this to be true because the DesignQ team does all of my personal graphic design work and they're great to work with. Check out DesignQ for all your ongoing graphic design needs. That's designq.co. Welcome to the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, where we bring you tips and insights to help you raise more money for your organization and lead more effectively. I'm your host, Andrew Olson.
Hey, everyone. Welcome. This is Andrew Olson. I'm here today with my good friend and someone that all of you should know, Eric Tomalis, who is the chief evangelist at Virtuous. Eric, hey, man, welcome to the show.
Hey, Andrew. What's going on, man? I'm so excited.
Dude, it is so good to see you. It's been way too long. I feel like we've both been in 150 cities since the last time we saw each other. Thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, man. And if you can't see the video, your beard is getting longer and grayer than mine. It's been a while since we see each other, my friend.
It has. This just means I'm old. And, this is what raising teenagers, farming, and being a fundraiser all at the same time does to you.
So true. But that's wisdom, right? Someone told me that. Someone told me that a long time ago when I was doing donor visits. I know we're going to get in that conversation later.
Yeah.
And I was doing a donor visit with him, and I was asking for a 7-figure gift, and I was young in my career, and he's like, could you send someone that has actual gray hair? And I said, okay, if you want me to go to CVS to get Just for Men gray or whatever that color was back then, I would. But wisdom, my friend, wisdom.
So no joke, the reason I started growing a beard in the first place was I was in a sales meeting and someone said to me, when's somebody like your dad going to show up and talk to me? And the very next day I was like, what do I do to get over that? And it was the beard. All right. So we're going to talk today about failure. This is an episode in a series that I'm doing on this topic. And what I'm hoping to do with this is to share with others that it's okay to fail, that we can screw stuff up and still make progress in our career and life, and also to specifically talk to leaders and help them understand how to help their people and their teams and their organization fail well. So with that as the backdrop, I would just love to start to pick your brain on this topic. First of all, like when you think of failure, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
I've done it a lot.
Same.
And it's okay. I think through, it's like, I wouldn't be where I am in my career today if I didn't fail forward 1,000 times, you know? And I think there's a lot of people that look at folks that are on a stage, on a successful, whether they're a head coach for a football team or they're doing a TED talk or, you know, they're a CEO of a major not-for-profit entity. They failed a ton of times on that journey. And through each one of those failures, we've learned from it, right? And as long as you're failing forward instead of failing backwards, then that's where my gut goes to immediately.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, I can't even count the number of times I failed at things. And you know, there's so many areas of life, career, leadership, being a husband, being a father, you know, all of these things where I'm like, yep, screwed that up again, right? This idea of failing forward, let's talk more about that. When you say that, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, I want to always look ahead and like, okay, so yeah, when you fail, it's not a good feeling at all right now. And so you want to actually analyze it and identify and learn from it and then go to that next step and then do something better. You know, it's a friend of mine. He actually uses the phrase. He's like, he wants to do 1% better every day, personally and professionally. And I think through that mindset too. So like, yeah, sure, you can fail. But if you're just going backwards and you're not stopping and taking a pause and seeing what you did fail at and what you can grow from, then of course you're not going to grow. But if you're going to look ahead and continue to move forward, then that's what I mean about fail forward. I mean, you know, I look and I relate a lot of it into, you know, you and I have long-standing marriages. with our spouses. And it's like, you know, it's not like you're just dating, right? You can fail and just go into the next person, right? Like, it's a genuine relationship, and this is your personal or professional career. And I think being able to have those growth opportunities goes further. So,
yeah. Okay, cool. So you and I have always been really candid with one another. And I think candid with, you know, when we speak and talk to, you know, other organizations and leaders in the industry. So let's be really candid here. One of the biggest problems with what you said is that there are organizations that culturally might say, yes, we believe in failing forward. But then when someone messes something up, they make a mistake, they screw something up, they forget to do something, that person gets publicly shamed, they get belittled, they lose opportunities for growth, they get told that if they don't, you know, buck up and fix it, they're going to get fired. I mean, all of those things lead to somebody going, I'm never going to take a chance again. I'm just going to sit here in the corner and be quiet and get just the minimum work done. Otherwise, those people are coming after me.
Yep.
How do we address that?
That's an institutional thing. It fires me up. I agree with you all day long that nonprofits are thinking that way, and specifically organizations, because we only look at, and this is, I know this is a hot button for you because you and I are very much on the same page on this. Nonprofits only look at year over year budgets. They don't look at long-term value of our donors and relationships and growth and everything else. I'm a big fan, and I say this a lot, is donor retention equals staff retention. So if you marry the two of those things together, and the fact that you can still build the relationship with your staff and those long-standing relationships and grow with people, we could be able to move it. And the other challenge with it is the reason why we look at year-over-year budgets is because we're not Amazon. You know, like, these for-profit companies can be in the red for 5, 6, 7 years. Amazon was in the red for about 8 years, and it's the most profitable business in the world. But we have one red year in nonprofit. We get, you know, questions, like you said. So we have to go to the donors. We have to go to our, because we're dealing with donor dollars versus corporate dollars. And so we need to build the trust with our donors of saying, hey, listen, we're going to try things. We're going to do things differently. We're going to learn from our mistakes. We're going to test. And that's an institutional thing, which leads into a relational.
Yeah. So I want to go even deeper on this. I mean, you and I have both led teams for a long time and managed all sorts of different, you know, personalities. As a leader, what are some of the things that you've done to create kind of that safety net for your people so that they don't feel like, hey, if I mess something up tomorrow, I've lost my job?
So it's a great example. I didn't even prepare for this in all honesty. But right off the bat, I still remember a moment. I was managing a group of about 20, 25 gift officers. And their main job was to go out and build relationships, set appointments. Their goal was 20 to 25 visits a month. And that was the program that we managed. I'm very much a data-driven person. And I still remember, it was the month of July or August. It was the summertime period. I am the type of leader, and that's the ones I try to value in, is those that can get in the trenches, they can actually be with your team and understand their environment and how they're feeling and what they're going through. And I remember doing a quarterly meeting, I think it was like September, and I was looking at July and August's numbers, and I was like, across the board, our entire team did not hit their meeting number, their appointment number. And I was like, what in the world? Why, guys? What's wrong with, like, what's our situation? And then I looked back at my own personal numbers, and they also were bad. And so it wasn't their fault. It was just at that moment, everybody was on vacation, right? It's summer break. And so instead of automatically as a manager, you know, chastising my team because they weren't hitting their appointment setting metrics, I actually looked at my own and I found out, hey, maybe it's all of us, not just one of them.
Yeah, no, that makes good sense. One of the things that it's something that we do on our staff every week in our weekly meetings. Actually, our mutual good friend Jesse Marsh, she brought it to our company.
Pittsburgh.
Okay, point with the Pittsburgh stuff. Come on, man. I can't ever see you or talk to you without hearing Pittsburgh come up. And you know what? This episode, this is where I'm going to have 25 people respond back and say, hey, stop bashing Pittsburgh. So,
yep. We're bashing Pittsburgh, Andrew.
Anyway, yes, the beloved Pittsburgher, Jesse Marsh, you know, I asked her to start leading some of our weekly team meetings. And one of the things she brought is this sort of kickoff to the meeting where, you know, there's a dozen of us or so on every team meeting call. And we start with what was your flop this week and what was your flip, right? Flop is being like a failure or a bad thing. And a flip is like, what's a good thing, right? And so, you know, what I love about that is I get to go first. So as the team leader, I set the stage for like, it's okay to say you fail, right? And then we also get to learn from each other, right? So somebody will say, hey, I messed this up. And I'll go, I didn't realize you could mess that up. That's a good thing for me to know. Now I won't do that, right? And then, you know, sort of the subtle psychological thing is we come back next week and everybody's still there, right? No one got voted off the island. Nobody got kicked out of Pittsburgh because of it. You know, it's, and we can say, okay, we all learn from that and we can move forward, but we're creating this culture where not only is it okay to mess something up, but it's okay to talk about it, right? And I feel like that has made a massive difference in the way that we've shaped our culture. But you and I have probably also both been in organizations where it's like, oh, so-and-so screwed that up and they're not here tomorrow. Or the other one, which is like, hey, I know you screwed that up, but don't ever talk about it again. We don't bring those things up.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and you know, what I look back at and listening to your story, and I know your culture, your organization's culture, it starts with trust, you know, and it's that trust factor. One, it starts off with you as a senior leader telling, you know, doing your own personal flop. And it sets the tone for everybody else. And then that trust that they will have a job tomorrow or next week or, you know, and everything else. And I think there's to the other side is other people are just, hate saying it, to go back to that revenue number of the, you know, attribution of like, where do people fight over those individual silos internally? And like, how can we all work and have shared goals and shared ideas and shared culture to grow trust?
Yeah. I mean, one of the other examples that I think is fascinating, I was interviewing your boss, Gabe Cooper. This is probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. And I asked him about failure and he told me this story. I don't think it's something that he does all the time, but he told me a story about how someone was doing some big project and they made a mistake and it was like one of those public facing mistakes, right? And so to help them understand that it was okay, he like had a little celebration and they had a cake and it was like, hey, this, we learned from this, right? We failed. It didn't go how we thought it would, but we're celebrating that you stuck your neck out and tried this and we all learned from it. And I thought like, that's another one of those things that speaks volumes about the culture, right? And I similarly, like the culture at Virtuous has always been something that I really admired because of how much trust and openness there is and just how authentic the organization is. But you don't get that without intentionality, right?
Well, and that story, I know that story because it's actually okay. In Fonts of Fundraising book. That Gabe wrote, and he shares that story freely, is the fact that if you didn't have that trust in that safe space and that celebration of that failure, that individual, the next time you go to a meeting or had a new idea, they won't open up. And what the whole idea is to continue to celebrate people who are not, we're not taking their ideas, we're working with other people's ideas, but still create that idea of innovation and culture of trust.
Yeah. You know, that in my mind is really the differentiator for organizations. You know, we just came off of a couple of weeks ago an all staff retreat in Texas. And we took probably 4 hours one day for everyone in the organization to brainstorm together about the biggest failures we had this last year, what we learned from them, what we've implemented to ensure that we don't experience them in the future. And then also to talk about like what else, you know, how else we can adapt our business around that. But what was really interesting to me is sometimes you go into a conversation like that and nobody wants to talk, right? And in this one, it was like, hey, let me tell you about my failure. Hey, I want to tell you about mine. There was such an openness to it and people at every level to be willing to say like, yeah, I screwed some stuff up. Let me share it with you because we can all learn from it. And it's just really refreshing to have that and not have this culture where you have to hide everything. And it does, and I think it really comes back to like the tone that CEO sets and that shapes what everybody, kind of how they behave, you know? I'm curious to know, you know, you and I both deal with boards a lot. What do you see with board members around this issue of failure? I will say in my own experience, I either don't hear them talk about it or they only talk about the person who is no longer there and something. What about your experience?
I mean, there's two different areas of boards that I've seen is like ones that know everything and then others that have no idea how the sausage is made, right? Like, and the connector of them all, they all have that for profit. They all are looking at that strategic effort of where we want to go. They have the business acumen. And those two different levels is like whether or not how much our executive or our team engages with them. You know, and if they don't know what's going on, they just see it from their small purview. And like sometimes perception is the reality versus the opposite versus balance. And so I like to lean in more on board, especially around change management and just growth. I'm just saying, hey, listen, it's an opportunity. They want the organization to survive. They believe in the mission and they want to be able to move forward. And so it should be acceptable. And honestly, frankly, the other side of course is if the board isn't happy, obviously we know how governance operates. It goes to the executive. It doesn't go to the team. Representation of the executive and the executive goes to the board. So we need to have that open dialogue.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that the other concept I was thinking about with this idea of failure, you mentioned change, right? So this world that we live in today is so rapidly changing. And I firmly believe that like there's no longer a scenario where change happens blanking out how to say this. We're in this era of like ongoing iterative change, right? You know, it used to be like, oh, we're going to do some change. And you go through a change process and then you're done and everybody kind of adapts for a while. Whereas today, it's everything is changing at a real rapid pace every day. And one of my thoughts around the issue of failure as it relates to change is like, what are some things you've seen or done yourself maybe to help organizations think about, you know, how to plan for failure in a change process so that it doesn't surprise you and stop, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. You have thoughts on that?
I mean, I just think through, I mean, like the phrase we always hear is like, just because we did it last year means we have to do it again this year, right? And so dig deeper into some of like these events and the programs, these campaigns and like things that we're doing. If it's not working right now, let's pivot immediately and have the freedom and flexibility from the leadership, from our board to be able to say, hey, we tried this. We tried to fill a gala of 100 people. We're at 25. Like, when do you call it, right? When do you say no is not, I can't move forward with it, right? It goes with trust and lead from your leadership, but also, you know, being able to, you know, not always do the same things.
Man, you bring up events and galas and
I know.
Handful of people showing up. It just reminds me of one of my own failures. So back when I was working inside a children's hospital, they had tasked my team with building out a grateful patient program. And so, you know, because it was a children's hospital and it's, you know, a regional, so most of the patients live nearby, we thought, you know, hey, let's host a zoo day for families, right? It's a great thing. We'll get the zoo involved. They'll donate the tickets, this and that. And a lot of that happened, but we had six families show up, right? And not that it had to be thousands or even hundreds, but it was just six. And we probably spent $30,000 on that event, right? So you know, you do the math on the cost per patient family acquired. Like there was never a time when we were going to break even on that investment. And particularly, you're right, we didn't even, that $30,000 was just hard cost, not even including the staff time. So, some of those things can just be brutal. And, you know, like you and I both know, you can't control the way a donor behaves, right? We can control all the other things. We can't control that part. So we do have to just sort of be prepared to take the hits, you know? And I think that's one of the things that concerns me most as I look at the industry today is that there's such, because of what you said, kind of starting this conversation of only looking at this year's number, right? There is such an aversion to saying, well, we just got hit in the face and it's not going to turn out the way we thought it was. But you know what? We learned some things and we'll make it better for next year.
And right? And I'm going to go a bit further with you because you said be prepared. I'm a Boy Scout, worked in the organization, former pro. I'm going to also share a failure of mine from a previous organization. Because I think we need to be prepared for failure, right? And when I was with St. Jude, I oversaw a large team, and we went out and the entire team did a lot of special events. And the rule at St. Jude, this is before a while ago, was if you had $1 million-plus gala, someone from the C-suite from Memphis, he was going to show up and was going to be one of the speakers. And so this was a gala I was my team was hosting in Houston and everything else. And it was, you know, large one. And it was, I think it was like $1.5 million. So the chief technology officer was the speaker. And lo and behold, at 2 o'clock in that afternoon, the entire technology platform shuts down. We had no registration. We had no credit card processing. We had no tech at all. I had a full team of volunteers and staff members, like all at the registration table of the auction and the online bidding or the silent auction and everything else. But I was prepared for all things, right? You don't know what's going to be in front of you to fail and everything else. And of course, being the Eagle Scout that I am, we already had the paper file cabinets and the triplicate forms and all the things ready to go. And the little, remember those, the swipers for the credit card?
Oh yeah.
Yep. The hard thing.
We would get the ink all over your hands.
Oh yeah. But we were ready. And like, it was such a miss on us with the chief technology officer there, but we were able to bounce back from it, you know?
Yeah.
And you have to be prepared for all things, right?
Yeah. Yeah. At least you could call IT pretty directly right there.
Well, he couldn't fix it. He was tried. It was a Saturday night. It was just like, it was a thing.
Man. But yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're right. That preparation and even just, you know, I was with another organization about a year ago. And one of the things I was really impressed by is they're embarking on a large project and someone in the room wasn't even a senior leadership person. It was a mid-level manager, and she stopped and she said, "All right, everybody. So if we do this, what could go wrong?" And I was like, "Wow, I only hear that in maybe 1 out of 100 meetings, right?" But it's exactly the right question to ask, because if you can get people thinking about, well, you know, proactively, what could go wrong, then to your point, you can plan for it and you can say, "Well, if we think that could go wrong, what are we going to do about it when it does go wrong?" Right? And then it's not a crisis, it's, oh, that's plan B, right? Or plan C, or we need so-and-so, and we've already prepared them for this. But if you just always assume that everything's going to go right, you're in for a world of hurt. Yeah. So, excuse me, I think we're pretty close to time here. I just want to get one more piece of insight for the audience from you, and that is, I want you to talk to the young fundraiser. Like, what's the guidance you give them about failing and growing?
Ooh, failing and growing. Test, try new things, get out there. You know, I was talking to a chief development officer yesterday for a major institution. She's brand new into that role, but not into her career. And she referred to everybody on her team as baby fundraisers, and which was hilarious. But she was in that mindset of they won't pick up the phone and call donors to say thank you. All they want to do is send text and mail and email, and it's easy. That is easy. And I think, and I agree with that, but I also, and I kind of went down the middle with her. I didn't say she was right or she was wrong. I think we need to test and we need to listen to our donors. We need to listen to what's appropriate to them, what's their channel, what's their preference. We need to hear what's important to them. We need to get out there. And all of those channels matter, whether it's phone or face-to-face or text, because everything matters to these donors, and that's the only way we're going to be able to grow. But be willing to get hung up on. Be willing to be a text message saying, hey, you know, unsubscribe, or be willing to, you know, ready for those folks to say no, because honestly, I'd rather our donors and our prospects say no quicker so that we can be able to move forward with, you know, actual what is important to them as well as the organization.
Absolutely. That's great insight. Mm-hmm. Eric, how can people reach you?
Connect with me on LinkedIn. We're all over there. I'm at virtuous.org. And then I guess we'll have my email address in here somewhere. So
yeah, we'll link to it for sure.
Love connecting with you, my man. This has been fun.
Amen.
Yeah.
Grateful for you to be here. Thanks for talking about failure with me. And I hope to see you at one of the 247 conferences we're going to do together in the next 6 months.
I'm grateful you didn't reach out to my wife about failure about me, and that's just way better.
Well, you notice mine's not on this recording either, because we'd both be in tears.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll see you at the next show, my man.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast. I have two favors to ask before I let you go. First, if you enjoyed this episode, please rate us and review us on whatever podcast platform you use to listen to this show. It'll help us reach more people with the tips and insights that you find most valuable. My second favor is a little bit of a favor to ask, but also a little bit of a gift to you. I write a daily Substack newsletter called the Leadership Growth Newsletter. It's free to you, and I write it to help people lead more effectively and in both life and at work. I'd love for you to click the link in the show notes and subscribe to that newsletter as well. Until next time, friends, I hope you make it a great day.